composer who's capable of restoring our national music to its true place in the art of Europe. Join me, Donald MacLeod, for Sir Hubert Parry as our Radio 3 Composer of the Week, all this week at 12 noon and again at 6:30.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. Just gone 1 o'clock, time for the news from Vaughan Savage.
The Culture Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, has said that now is the moment to put in place a new regulatory system for the newspaper industry and that he would like to see changes made in this Parliament. The Leveson inquiry into press standards is continuing. In a BBC interview, Mr. Hunt said the country needed a much tougher system to deal with newspapers which stepped out of line. He said the body which punished newspapers that transgressed should be independent of proprietors and editors. Rupert Murdoch is expected to fly to Britain this week to meet News International managers following the arrest of 5 Sun journalists and 3 other people as part of Operation Elvenon, the investigation into alleged corrupt payments to police officers. The other arrests include a member of the armed forces and a Ministry of Defence employee. The Shadow Health Secretary, Andy Burnham, has accused the Prime Minister of putting his own political pride ahead of the interests of the NHS by pressing ahead with controversial changes in England. David Cameron has accused Labour of political opportunism for opposing the health bill and says he supports the Health Secretary, Andrew Lansley. A debate is underway at the Greek Parliament on new austerity measures approved by the coalition government in return for more bailout money from the EU and the International Monetary Fund. The Prime Minister, Lucas Papademos, has warned that Greece will descend into uncontrolled chaos if the proposals are rejected. Al-Qaeda has sent a message of support to the Syrian opposition to President Assad and told them not to rely on help from outside. In a video, the terrorist leader Ayman al-Zawahiri warns the opposition not to trust the West, the Arab League or Turkey. One of the biggest selling singers in history, Whitney Houston, has been found dead in a Los Angeles hotel room at the age of 48. She sold more than 170 million records and won more awards than any other singer. The exact cause of her death is still being investigated. The weather. Occasional outbreaks of light rain or drizzle will continue across the United Kingdom throughout the day, with some sunny spells in places. There'll be clear spells overnight with patchy frost and fog. The BBC News and Weather at 2:30 past one.
And now the early music show. And today, Catherine Bott's subject is a 14th century medieval masterpiece, Le Roman de Fauvel.
Once upon a time, there was a muddy-coloured horse whose very name, Fauvel, stood for vice and vanity. But Dame Fortune raised him from his stable to rule like a king, and men who would once have ridden him were compelled instead to groom him from head to tail. No, it's not a fairy story, but a mordant satire on the corruption of church and state in 14th century France. The Roman de Fauvel survives in several manuscripts, one of which adds music to the mix.
Thank you.
To discuss this extraordinary work, I'm joined down the line from across the Atlantic by Dr. Emma Dillon, Professor of Music at the University of Pennsylvania and author of Medieval Music Making and the Roman de Favelle. Emma, welcome. Can we start with the background to the roman? What is it?
The Roman de Favelle is a popular French romance, was written sometime in the second decade of the 14th century. And simply put, it's a fabulous satire on some terrible events that occurred in the royal realm in that decade. You can't complain about these things directly. So the roman is a kind of translation of historical events into a fabulous allegorical story, populated by a horse, Favelle, and goddesses, virtues and vices. There's one particular version that you mentioned which survives in the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris, very special to us because it is amplified with music and with images. And it contains something like 160 songs. And in this way, through image, text and music, the story is retold. It was a precious resource, it's like a treasure trove for us in terms of music history.
Let me just explain that Roman de Favelle is divided into three sections across two books. Book one introduces us to Favelle. He's the muddy, beige-coloured horse who's got ideas above his stable. Dame Fortune raises him to man's estate, and he rules a topsy-turvy world in which men must crawl on their bellies and tend to his every need. Well, we haven't got time to broadcast the whole of the Roman de Favelle in one programme, but in these evocative excerpts, all the music is from the recording by the Boston Camerata and ensemble project Ars Nova, directed by Joel Cohen. And to bring the text to life in English translation and ready to go now, with me in the studio are actors Caroline Martin and Scott Handy.
Here begins the Book of Favelle.
I'd rather be a swineherd than rub down Favelle. I'd rather be flayed alive. I don't care for his money. I don't covet his gold. I'd rather be a swineherd than rub down Favelle.
Favelle, the mud-coloured horse, no longer lives in a stable, but somewhere far more becoming. Dame Fortune, much against reason, has made him lord of her abode.
Oh, fickle Fortune, who creates such uncertainty! Why such a prize for one so undeserving? Through him the faith will wander, deprived of its guide.
Thank you. people of all nations came forward, the mighty and the poor, and all were prepared to rub down Favel.
Ensemble project Ars Nova with the motet Quare Fremuerunt Gentes, Why Did the People Complain? I'm very struck by the music's beauty and the clarity of the text. It doesn't really relate perhaps that closely to the squalor of what the people were having to do to the horse.
That's a very nice way to put it. I think what we just heard in that last sample was just a beautiful representation of the range of music in Favel. It contains something like 169 pieces total, and across the entire range of French music history, it's like a little encyclopedia of French musical practice. So what we heard there was some of the older music in the manuscript. We heard an example of Conductus, which, as you say, is all about the clarity of the words, pristine quality to the sound of that music. We also heard a motet, which is a very important genre in the early 14th century, often a medium through which political messages are transmitted and complaints are uttered.
So that's a treat for music lovers, but this is also a treat for literary scholars, this roman de Favel, isn't it? I mean, the name symbolism throughout, there's Dame Fortune, there's Vainglory, who we're going to hear about, whom he marries in the end. Even the name Favel, it reminds me of a sort of pre-echo of a cross between The Pilgrim's Progress and Animal Farm, this piece. Can you tell us, talk us through the letters of the name Favel, because they all mean something bad, don't they?
Yes, who is Favel? Well, his name is actually an acrostic, and so I'll take you through it. It is F for flattery, A for avarice or avarice, the U becomes a V for villainie or what you might say villainousness, V for variété or capriciousness, E for envie or envy, and L for lâcheté, or cowardice. But as well as being an acrostic, his name also means false veil, to signify the deceptive nature of the beast. And also his colour is significant. He's, fauve, muddy brown. And actually, in the colour symbolism of the time, that was the colour of vanity. So it's a pretty abominable CV, all told.
Not an animal with any redeeming features. Well, here we are with all sorts of people in another extract of music and words from the Roman de Favel, all sorts coming before him to rub him down, the rich, the poor, the clergy.
From Favel comes flattery, who has dominion over the world, and avarice, who is most pleased to rub down Favel, and villainy, and caprice, envy and cowardice, these six ladies are signified in Fauvel. Fauvel is a beast, and he is a beast too who honours and fates him. Virtue is dying. Vice is the victor. Faith is forced into exile.
Virtus moritur, vivit visium, fides truditur in exilium, jam jus cogitur ad silentium, dolus horitur et frascoliditur incurit lex dispendium. Omne vetium senset licitum, secat divitum mens cupidine, non in nomine fidens alio, quam denario, cuius gratia fit propitia, omnis curia. Previa farveli malicia.
The divine ordinance is all turned to ruin. We walk by night without a light, governed by a mud-coloured horse.
A blessed king indeed, Rex Beatus, the title of that motet, and the muddy-coloured horse Fauvel is riding high at the end of the first book of the Roman de Fauvel. Emma Dillon, who wrote it and for whom was it written?
Well, these are very interesting and somewhat mysterious questions. The text-only version was written by Gervais du Bus around 1310 and the second book finished in 1314. Gervais was actually a notary in the household of the French King Philip IV, which is something like a civil servant. So he was seeing firsthand the corruption of power in the king's house. The version that we're listening to dates probably around the accession of his son, Philip V, to the French throne in 1317. And the adjustments to the text, the addition of the music, the whole replanning of the text, is ascribed to one Chailloux de Pestin. Scholars have battled over who Chailloux is, and there's been many a theory, harebrained ideas about who he might have been. But the truth is that we actually don't know who Chailloux is.
For whom was it designed?
I think the manuscript is a mixture of admonition and complaint. It is definitely a complaint about the state of affairs in the household of the French kings. But at the same time, it's being framed as a lesson in morality. An admonition, perhaps, to a new king, Philip V, as to how to proceed into his reign. In other words, learn the lessons from the recent past, don't repeat them. And it does seem likely that it was intended for the king, the new king, Philip V. It's possible that his uncle, Charles de Valois, commissioned the work, but certainly the messages are suitable for a new king coming to the throne, looking ahead to a future thinking about how to rule over the kingdom.
Well, I'm the presenter of the early music show, so I've got the authority right now, and it's time for me to say if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the early music show with me, Catherine Bott, and today's topic is one of admonition and complaint. It's the 14th century French satire, the Roman de Fauvel. Down the line is expert Emma Dillon. In the studio are actors Caroline Martin and Scott Handy, and on our metaphorical turntable, the recording by the Boston Camerata and Ensemble Project Ars Nova, directed by Joel Cohen. So, moving now on to book two, and a young horse's fancy lightly turns to things of love.
One day, Fauvel was sat in his palace, a crown on his head, richly attired in gold. The walls of his court were beautifully and elegantly painted with songs, lays and ballads, hockets, motets and chansonettes, telling not of amorous pursuits, but of well-practiced frauds which Master Deceit had prescribed.
Then Fauvel said to his people, "You should all indulge in pleasures and feasts, for you are of my court and my lineage. You know I have no wife, but it would please me to marry so that I might multiply. I will woo Dame Fortune, who gives to all, and I will be master of her wheel." And the people of the court replied, "What good sense you have, Fauvel! What noble thoughts! You have uncovered your heart and opened up your great secret. All that we are pleased with. There is very great honour in this."
Qui bien me plaît, où est épousasse, si que...
The followers of Fauvel, who are intent on ill, have had the idea to take Fortune to wife. The Pope and all his brothers, dukes, counts, kings, emperors, serve him without opposition. Fauvel, a wretched path is set before you.
So, Fauvel sets out from his palace to woo Dame Fortune. Emma, the text there is a little bit ambiguous because I thought that he was becoming rather like a sort of dear leader. You could imagine his courtiers indulging in what I suppose we should say is faux grief as he goes off. But we've already had a hint that it's not going to end well, haven't we?
Well, this is a wonderful moment in the story because after all the solemnity of the first book where we learn about the evil nature of the beast and all the terrible things that are going on in France and what a reign of terror this is, the book sort of takes a wonderful turn and becomes a love story. Fauvel sets off with his entourage to go and woo Dame Fortune. He decides that the key to his future success is that he has to have control of her wheel. And at this point, we enter a completely different world. This is the world of courtly love. This is the world of love songs, of unrequited love, endless longing for the lady, endless pleading for her hand. It really steps out of the political scene into something quite different. And for some time, the goddess and Fauvel go back and forth. He's not very bright, Fauvel, and so he doesn't take well to being told no. He doesn't believe it when Lady Fortune refuses his suit, and so he keeps on singing.
I suppose this is the absolute moment to mention the parallels with the real courtly romance of the Romance of the Rose. Is Fauvel in any real sense a parody of it or an imitation?
Absolutely. There are so many cues at this point in the story that we're supposed to be reading this in the tradition of the French romance. You mentioned the Roman de la Rose, one of the most popular texts of the Middle Ages. And at this point in the story, we absolutely slip into that model. Except, of course, it's a horse and a horse wooing a goddess. So the parody is absolutely there for all to see. But it's also a wonderful opportunity for music because throughout this episode, we have song after song after song, and this is again very much part of the tradition of courtly romance in the 13th and 14th centuries, that the absolute perfect medium to express oneself in love is through singing.
Good.
And when Fauvel had approached Dame Fortune and declared his love for her, Fortune turned to him and said,
"Fauvel, you are quite mad and bold, as much indeed as word. How did it enter your head that I could marry you? Listen, you in whom all evil lives. Fortune is nothing more than divine providence, which lists, measures, and determines, according to reason, the world and the round of all its seasons, and to slaughter from the list the rich, the wise, the poor, and the stupid."
My lady, have pity. Forever, without delay, I wish to serve my love, who took me with a look, forever, without delay. I desire to have none other than her fine, perfect body, forever, without delay. I wish to serve my love.
You are mad to believe that I am a woman like any other.
Fauvel is ill-placed to achieve his desire. He has lived too much in luxury. Sweet, noble lady.
Fauvel, what do you want?
I give you my heart.
You're insane.
I am anxious to please you.
I care not.
I know not what to do.
Take a jump.
Alas, I love you so much.
That does not please me.
Alas, what should I do?
Never will I take you for my love.
Out. hoppa si haut, la svenguse si, ne me plaita si. Non sai che fare, già m'amor ne te l'ere.
Farvel, think that the world is moving on. All who favour crime in the house of the Lord destroy the laws which would benefit him and his seed. You, you malicious thorn, the envoy of the Antichrist.
Your legs will be broken and your offspring will perish.
Food for thought for poor old baffled Fauvel. But as you heard with the turning of the wheel of the symphony accompanying that last piece, fortune has another cycle of her wheel to turn for Fauvel, and she brings into being his marriage to Vainglory, the beautiful and deceiving maiden. Emma Dillon, this is a beautiful manuscript. That almost goes without saying, that has this fabulous text and these lovely expressive pieces of music. But we shouldn't regard it as merely a score for an opera or a musical. It's not a libretto. It's not a performing edition, is it?
No, not quite. It's a very unusual manuscript, especially with regards to the way that it uses music. It's as much an object to look at as it is to perform from. And I have to just emphasise what an extraordinarily beautiful and interesting book it is. Opening this manuscript is like opening the door on a really good party. It's full of colour and movement, bright red staves of music. There are illuminations throughout. It looks a little bit, in some sequences, like a comic strip as you watch Favel and his entourage make their way to visit Fortuna and so on. And when it comes to performing Favel, it's a real conundrum. In the sequence that we just heard, it's eminently performable. Music is cued into the story so that when somebody finishes speaking, the cue literally says, "And then Favel sang this song." Cue the music. But in many other places in the manuscript, there's no obvious moment or indication where the music fits in. And I think that one has to think of it something like a soundtrack or as a kind of sonic illumination of the text. It functions as an amplification of the messages of the story, but in the medium of song. And it does leave us in a kind of conundrum as to how exactly one imagines the users of this manuscript experienced the book.
Now it's the denouement. It's Favel's wedding day, so sound the war trumpets.
In the sweetness of the summer, in the month of May, when the very thought of love puts many a heart in turmoil, the Harlequins composed this sweet, joyous verse.
It was in the country, in the region which is called Sweet France, that Favel would remain and dwell in the best city in the world, in Paris.
Because
People enter Paris every day. They approach from every corner. They come to seek the city of Fauvel.
Let carnality his friend come, for without her Fauvel can do nothing. Let gluttony come too, with drunkenness, anger, dispute, murder, discord, heresy, and pride.
But I see pain approaching, for everything is back to front. And there was a great feast with all kinds of music and fine wine. And then it was time for the nuptials of Fauvel and Vainglory. The night is come, which blacks out the day, and it is time to retire. Without further delay, Fauvel jumps into bed to lie with his bride. And in the streets are sounds of tabas and cymbals and large instruments, dirty and filthy, accompanying the people with songs to the devil.
And there follows a great charivari as Fauvel consummates his marriage to Vainglory. Emma, there's a link which we must not leave out with the Ars Nova and Philippe de Vitry in this piece. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yes. Philippe de Vitry was one of the most important composers of the early 14th century and also responsible for a famous treatise, the Ars Nova, which was a kind of manifesto for a new way of writing music. And several of the motets in Fauvel have been securely attributed to him. And we may actually wonder whether he may even have written them for the manuscript. I think also you've got to keep in mind that as well as being a wonderful poet and composer and theorist, Philippe de Vitry was also a politician. And in fact, in the late 1310s, early 1320s, he too served as a notary, rather like Gervais de Bus and Chaillot de Pestin. So it's not a huge leap to imagine that he may even have had a hand in the making of this manuscript.
And indeed, we'll be hearing a motet by Philippe de Vitry in the last sequence of music. So what was the ultimate message of the Roman de Fauvel?
Well, it's an interesting ending to Fauvel because it doesn't end exactly well. Fauvel is still alive at the end of the Roman.
Well, that's a start.
And it's not good. And not only that, there are little baby Fauvels stampeding around the sweet garden of France. So I think what one needs to take from this is a message of complaint, anxiety about the past, and a message of warning and hope for the future. I think the book is intended to instruct those that follow this moment in history in how to attend to the lessons of the past and to do things better. It's a serious message for serious times.
My thanks to Emma Dillon, whose new book, The Sense of Sound, Musical Meaning in France, 1260 to 1330, is coming out in April, and to actors Caroline Martin and Scott Handy. And now to a final sequence of words and music. As Emma said, Fauvel and Vainglory's litter begin to ravage the beautiful orchard that symbolises France. And we hear Ensemble Project Ars Nova wonder, How shall we sing under an unjust law? The wolf is in the flock.
Fauvel and Vainglory spawn many, many children. Everywhere there are new Fauvels, who are like young wolves. And I pity the beautiful garden that is sweet France. Alas, what great fortune it is that in such a fine orchard Fauvel has come to live. And because I feel such anger at this, I place here this motet, whoever may complain. Lady of Heaven, whom all the hosts of saints venerate, pray that your Son, the Saviour of all, through his love and clemency, take Fauvel from us, and with the absence of his followers, see us rejoice.
I'd rather be a swineherd than rub down Fauvel. I'd rather be flayed alive I don't care for his money. I don't covet his gold. I'd rather be a swineherd than rub down Fauvel.
De virginité, garde vertus, car vérité soutienne et tienne en puissance le lys et le jardin de France.
Music from Le Roman de Fauvel, which was the subject of today's early music show with Catherine Bott. The producer in Salford was Chris Wines.
Original British drama on BBC Radio 3.
This is your opportunity to take full responsibility.
A group of violent offenders is given a second chance. They must attend a course that addresses their behaviour. It's no soft option.
Say it, Gary.
I hit her. Okay?
It's the most confronting thing they've ever done.
I make one call and you go to jail. You've got 25 weeks to convince me to do otherwise.
A Man's World, drama on 3 with Siobhan Redmond, tonight at 8:30 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, now it's time for our Sunday concert, which took place earlier this month in Belfast. It's introduced by John Toll.
Hello and welcome to the Ulster Hall in Belfast, where the Ulster Orchestra is on stage for this Nordic Connections concert, which features Grieg's tribute to Ludvig Holberg, the so-called father of Danish-Norwegian literature. At the end, we have The Power of the Fifth Symphony by Sibelius, and in between, a 10th anniversary celebration of the Scottish composer James Macmillan's spectacular percussion concerto, Veni, Veni, Emmanuel, performed by Colin Currie. In 1884, the great Norwegian composer Grieg was invited to write a piece to mark 200 years since Holberg's birth. Holberg was a sort of Scandinavian Molière, and his comedies were very popular, and he also wrote extensively on philosophy and produced several very influential books of ideas. Grieg wrote this suite of five movements for piano originally, and they're based on 18th century dance forms reflecting the Baroque times during which Holberg lived. There's a preludium, an elegant saraband, a lively gavotte, an air, and then a rigodon. Grieg orchestrated it a few months later, and it was given its premiere in 1885 in Bergen, home city of both Grieg and Holberg. The Ulster Orchestra welcoming back also its American principal conductor, Joanne Folletta, for this concert. And here she is to conduct the Ulster Orchestra in the Holberg Suite by Grieg.
Thank you.